A Potter Carol by Originella. Chapter 1. Prologue. Arthur Weasley's father and mother-in-law, Metis and Letitia Pruitt, approved of his blood status, but not that of his lack of fortune. His own parents, Septimus and Cedrella Weasley, could not have been happier with anyone for a daughter-in-law than Molly Pruitt. After Arthur's brothers-in-law, Fabian and Gideon, had tragically perished in the 1817-1819 Wizards typhus pandemic, Letitia Pruitt had been so overcome she had died of a heart attack, Metis following her in his grief not too long later. Septimus and Cedrella Weasley had lived another decade or so before they, too, passed away from old age. In the meantime, Arthur and Molly had accumulated a sizable family in the years that followed. William Weasley was born first, in the first 2 years after their graduation from Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry. Following William came Charles, then Percy, then the twins, Fred and George, then their youngest boy, Ronald, and finally, Molly's long-awaited daughter, Ginevra. As time went on and all the children began at Hogwarts, many of the children took on shortened versions of their given names when they became comfortable enough to do so. Eventually, Ron's closest friend, Harry Potter, came to stay with Ron's family, after Harry's parents, James and Lily, had succumbed to the 1847-1848 Wizard's Flu pandemic. It was decided, after a lengthy discussion, that Molly and Arthur would adopt young Harry, and, once the adoption went through, they were, ultimately, the proud parents of 8 children, and Harry was never treated any differently. When all the Weasley children graduated from Hogwarts, it was to enter the workforce as quickly as possible. Bill apprenticed as a cursebreaker at Gringotts Wizarding Bank, where he would ultimately meet his wife, Fleur Delacour, from France, who had crossed continents in order to better her English. Charlie had gone on to Romania to become an apprentice at their Dragon Preserve, and was getting along well with everyone there. Percy, meanwhile, was destined for the Ministry of Magic, and became one of the underlings in the secretary department underneath Minister Dougald MacPhail. When Fred and George graduated themselves, they managed to pool their money and open a shop in Diagon Alley, which catered to the pranks they so adored. Ron joined the Auror Academy after his own graduation, and his own engagement was announced to fellow student Hermione Granger, who was a close friend of both Harry and Ginny's. Finally, Ginny apprenticed with Madame Pomfrey the Medi-Witch at Hogwarts, alongside her own fiancé, Draco Malfoy. For years, everyone in the Weasley family, as well as Headmaster Dumbledore and his head of house, Professor McGonagall, had asked Harry what it was he wanted to do. Harry carefully considered all the departments at the Ministry of Magic carefully, but ultimately decided that such a thing was not for him. After leaving Weasley's Wizard Weezes, Fred and George's shop, one day, after going over the quarterly review, he stumbled upon a new shop in Diagon Alley, which was positioned between Quality Quidditch Supplies and the Apothecary, called Wixen Chocolatiers. Perplexed at the notion that he'd never seen it before, Harry cautiously stepped forward, drawing his winter cloak more closely about him as the snow swirled around him, and pressed closer, curiosity finally winning out, as he took a hold of the handle and opened the door, a bright, tinkly sound of a bell jingling as he entered. It was considerably warmer inside the establishment as the door swung shut behind him, and Harry got a good look at the fare the shop boasted. It seemed to be much finer in quality than that of honeydukes or sugar plums, and seemed to specialize in all things chocolate, in all shapes and sizes. Creamy nougats were in one corner, while another one featured salted caramels, and a third location boasted dark chocolate swirled with coffee. Since it was very close to Christmas, each section was done up in red, green, silver, or gold, with magnificent trappings of boxes, ribbons, and swirls of magic in the air constructed out of glitter. Harry felt that he was being watched then, and slowly turned his head, his eyes widening then as he spotted a man with wavy dark hair staring back at him, his bluish-silver eyes flashing with a moment of intelligence and recognition. "I'm sorry, sir," he said quickly, forcing his voice not to tremble, as his cheeks heated and his groin tightened at the sensation of such a handsome man staring at him. "Your shop was intriguing, to say the least."
"Many people don't recognize the art that truly is chocolate making," the gentleman replied, not unkindly, as he swept into the room. "And who do we have here?"
"Harry Potter, sir," Harry replied, bowing to the fellow wizard, unknowing if he was outranked, due to him only just obtaining his mantle and fortune as Earl of Godric's Hollow just after his 17th birthday. Could it really have been over 4 years ago now?
"It's a great pleasure to meet you."
"Ah, Potter," the man said, and nodded his head. "I went to school with your mother and father. I was once quite close with both of them, and then we took different paths, to say the least."
Harry blinked. "You knew them, sir?"
"I did. Oh, and I am Sirius Black, Duke of Grimmauld," he replied, something faltering in his facial expression then, almost as if he didn't like his title.
Harry nodded his head. Although his mother and father had mentioned Sirius, they hadn't said much, other than he went to school with them.
"I am familiar with your name, sir," Harry told him promptly. "However, if you were so close with my parents, why did you separate? I can understand taking different paths, but—"
"Your mother and father wished to marry after Hogwarts," Sirius replied with a small shrug. "I had a desire to go out into the world and make something of myself. Despite my younger brother dying and making me the sole heir to the House of Black, I still wanted to be a success without merely having a fortune because of my blood status."
"So, chocolates, then?" Harry asked.
Sirius nodded.
"Yes, chocolates. I attended private lessons with legendary pastry chefs and other dessert makers throughout France, Italy, and Germany. Although we do sell other things in this shop," he continued, directing Harry's attention to a massive case by the register, which was filled with holiday biscuits, cakes, and other baked goods. "Chocolate always seemed to call out to me on a level I couldn't even begin to explain to anyone. Of course, things are a bit slow at present due to Remus not being around."
Harry blinked, recognizing the name.
"Remus Lupin?" he asked.
Sirius gave Harry the ghost of a smile.
"Yes, another friend from my school days. He handles the biscuits, cakes of all varieties, fruit tarts and custards. He and Dora, my beloved cousin, were married last year, and Dora just gave birth to their son, Edward, called Teddy. He'll be out of the shop for a considerable period, naturally, until the Easter holidays."
Harry found himself straightening up then.
"So you have a need of someone to assist you?" he asked, his voice trembling.
Sirius looked Harry over.
"Do you know anything about business?"
"Yes," Harry responded. "I have shares in Weasley's Wizard Wheezes, actually. I'm one of their silent partners, and go over the books with Fred and George quarterly."
"You took arithmancy at Hogwarts, then?"
Harry smiled ruefully at that. "At my future sister-in-law's suggestion, yes. It was difficult to begin with, but her encouragement was quite fulfilling."
Sirius inclined his head at that.
"How about baking?"
"The Weasleys adopted me, and Mum Weasley showed me everything she knew about cooking and baking," Harry explained, and was pleased that Sirius looked quite impressed. "I love baking cakes the most," he confessed, and was rewarded with a more full smile from Sirius. "Something about creating something from nothing, it's
magic."
Sirius and Harry breathed at the same time. Sirius nodded his head.
"Molly Weasley's baked goods are the stuff of legends," he praised. "I suppose you come up with your own recipes since then?"
Harry nodded. "Of course. My specialty is a dark chocolate tart with cherries, port wine, and finished with a rich chocolate ganache."
Sirius looked mightily impressed.
"You have the recipe memorized, then?"
Harry nodded, this time a fair bit more eagerly.
"Yes, sir," he assured the man.
"Do you use a cherry puree or whole cherries?"
Sirius questioned him.
Harry looked up at the man and smirked. "I never give away the milk for free."
Sirius returned his smirk.
"That is quite Slytherin of you."
"The hat wanted me in Slytherin," Harry told the man, who raised his eyebrows. "But I knew I was better suited for Gryffindor."
Sirius nodded his head.
"I see."
He hesitated for a moment, looking around the shop.
"In which other classes did you take your NEWTs? I assume arithmancy was one of them."
"It was," Harry confirmed. "Other than arithmancy, I also took alchemy, ancient runes, astronomy, care of magical creatures, charms, defense against the dark arts, herbology, history of magic, potions, and transfiguration."
Sirius looked mightily impressed by that.
"What time-turners used?"
Harry flushed.
"Yes," he admitted. "Hermione and I had the same schedule, though, so we really only needed one. But Professor McGonagall, Headmaster Dumbledore, and the Minister of Magic all signed off on it."
"And your scores?" Sirius queried.
"O's in each subject," Harry confessed, flushing a deeper shade of red. "Hermione would expect nothing less. She made our revision schedules, too."
"Yours and your brother's?"
"Ron Weasley," Harry said quickly. "He's in the Aura Academy at the Ministry of Magic."
"And you didn't wish to be an Aura, Harry?"
Harry shook his head. "No, I didn't, sir."
Sirius didn't press him further.
"Well, Christmas is a month away," he mused. "Business gets a bit fast at this point, as everyone wants chocolate-covered oranges upon the day itself."
Harry smiled. "I prefer strawberries with my chocolate," he mused. Sirius smiled a little at that.
"Interesting," he replied. "Could I trouble you to come into the shop again, Harry, 3 days from now, to help with the customers and make some of that delicious cake you mentioned? It would have to be early."
Harry nodded. "I could, yes. How early?"
4 in the morning,
Sirius replied, and Harry nodded at him.
"I can give you the flu password if you'd prefer."
Harry gave the man a small smile.
"That would be wonderful."
After getting the flu password from Sirius, Harry made his way out of the shop after he also had thanked the man profusely. He made his way to the restaurant district of Diagon Alley, passing by the Leaky Cauldron as he did so. Ron and Hermione had some free time for luncheon that day, and Draco and Ginny were going to join them. Harry passed by the Wicked Bat, the Giggling Ghost, and the Flaming Phoenix, until he came upon a posh establishment called the Thorned Rose, where he and his friends had gone frequently due to its fairy-tale-like appearance, dishes, and waitstaff. Stepping inside, Harry was told by the buxom hostess that his party had already arrived, and was shown into a private room called the Dwarves' Cottage. The restaurant itself was done up in a peeling brown stone, polished beautifully, with stained glass windows depicting the tales each room represented, with the entryway being dedicated to Sleeping Beauty, due to the restaurant's name. Smiling as he stepped into the room decorated after Snow White, down to the stained glass of a raven-haired woman with red lips kissing her Prince Charming, and mine carts holding onto additional plates, silverware, serviettes, and glasses, he bent to kiss both Hermione and Ginny on their cheeks, and clasped hands with both Ron and Draco. Harry lowered himself into the seat, taking the menu on offer.
"You look happy today," Draco mused, smiling at his friend.
The heir to the Marquis of Malfoy had always been a bit full of himself, but that had just added to his charm, and he had calmed down considerably when his twin younger sisters, Cordelia and Cressida, had begun at Hogwarts their 5th year, and Ginny's 4th.
"Something happened during the quarterly review?"
"Only that Alicia and Angelina stopped by for a bit of a snog afterwards," Harry replied, sipping at his gillywater.
Ginny made a face.
"Please, they played Quidditch with us, Harry," she begged, and nodded over at Ron to include him in the argument as well. "I really don't want to think about anyone snogging them."
"They are engaged," Ron said softly, shrugging, not really seeing an issue.
Hermione patted his hand.
"That's right, love. And provided that no one was coerced in any way, it shouldn't be seen as an issue."
"And provided that they use contraceptive charms," Draco put in.
Ginny rolled her eyes, slumping beside Draco and huffing slightly.
"You know very well that when Cordelia started her courtship with Theo Knott, and Cressida brought Blazabini home for the first time, that you were at your wit's end."
"Because they're my mates, and they're so...
17, "Of legal age in the wizarding world?" Ginny asked, affixing her fiancé with a penetrative expression. "And besides, Theo and Blaze will give them every luxury and comfort they're accustomed to. Plus, Lucius and Narcissa approve."
"Well, of course they do," Draco snipped. "Theo's heir to a dukedom, and Blaze is due to inherit a wizarding principality in Italy," his gripe continued.
"If I recall correctly, I believe we were discussing Harry's happiness," Hermione said quickly, not wanting Draco and Ginny to dissolve into one of their passionate arguments, which had led the Weasley and the Malfoy families to move up the wedding date more than once. Hermione turned to Harry, and although her expression was bright, Harry knew just how exhausted she was due to her work as an unspeakable for the Ministry of Magic. "Tell us, Harry," she encouraged him, and Harry could sense that Ron was holding her hand underneath the table. "What's made you so happy today? Did the quarterly review with Fred and George go well, then?"
"We're pulling in 20% more business than third quarter," Harry informed her, and his friends around the table congratulated him heartily. "But, although I'm quite pleased about that, there's something else."
"What is it, mate?" Ron asked.
"Well, I went into a newer shop earlier," he replied, shrugging his shoulders slightly. "It's called Wixen Chocolatiers."
"Oh, I've seen that shop," Ron said eagerly, sitting up, while Hermione, Ginny, and Draco turned to look over at him, in addition to Harry,
and proceeded to gaze back and forth between them until Ron continued speaking. "The one with the crimson sign with the golden border and golden letters, right next door to Weezer's." Hermione nodded her head.
"Oh, yes, that's right. Ron pointed it out to me last week, after we met Ginny and Draco for tea at Rosalie Teabag."
"Did you go inside the shop, then?" Draco wanted to know.
"I did, yes," Harry responded. "The proprietor said he went to Hogwarts, when my parents went there themselves. Introduced himself as Sirius Black, Duke of Grimmauld."
Draco raised his eyebrows at Harry's declaration. "Sirius is my cousin," he said softly, and all eyes turned to look at the heir to the House of Malfoy. "Well, my mother's cousin, actually. He was the first Black to be sorted into Gryffindor, Mother told me and the girls when we were little. Great-Aunt Walburga, frightening woman, she wouldn't have approved of any of you, not that it matters, really, burned his name off the family tapestry."
Harry's jaw dropped.
"That's pretty serious," he breathed, shocked at Draco's Grand-Aunt Walburga's behavior. "Was it just because he sorted Gryffindor, then?"
"Well, he thought the whole pure-blood thing was mental," Draco replied.
Ginny affixed her fiancé with a look.
"Did he now?"
Draco sighed. "My parents are conservative, of course, but they would never fault the Sorting Hat for sorting you somewhere other than Slytherin," he replied placatingly. "And besides, they adore your family, plus Harry and Hermione. If it weren't for Hermione, I wouldn't have done well on my OWLs or my NEWTs, and Harry gave me plenty of Quidditch pointers. Plus, we're all best friends now."
Ginny sighed, but nevertheless pressed a kiss onto Draco's cheek.
"Oh, very well, then."
Harry was about to speak further, but their hostess returned and asked what they'd all be ordering for luncheon.
"I'll have the 3 little roast hogs, please," Harry said at last, as it was his usual order, which was stuffed with sage and onion stuffing and accompanied by roasted potatoes and other vegetables, and baked apples for pudding.
"The Rapunzel salad, please, with grilled salmon," Hermione said once it was her turn.
It was a beauty of a dish, with glazed pears upon the delicate lettuce leaves, and was finished off with a trio of blueberry tarts.
"I'll have the cheese souffle, please, with the small meat and vegetable board," Ginny said softly. It, too, was a pièce de résistance of the restaurant, with the cheese souffle being fluffy and yellow, and the board being cedar plank, with sliced prosciutto, salami, mortadella, and chorizo, together with celery and carrots, and was finished with crème brûlée.
"The roasted golden goose, please," Ron said, smiling to himself at the notion of what he was about to eat. The goose came stuffed with chestnut and bacon stuffing, and was served with French beans and potato dumplings, and was finished with trifle.
"The pumpkin stew, please," came Draco's order at last.
It was served in a roasted pumpkin, and was thick and very creamy, and was accompanied with a sizable chunk of freshly baked bread, and was finished with a trio of multicolored macarons. Harry waited until the waitress had gone before he turned to regard his friends again. "Anyhow, I gleaned that he works with another old schoolmate, Remus Lupin." Hermione gasped at the name and cast a silencing charm around the table.
"Careful, Harry," she warned him. "From what I know of him, he's a very kind gentleman, but Baron Lupin is a werewolf."
Harry nodded his head, knowing just how dangerous werewolves had the capability of being. But the stigma was slowly fading since Fenrir Greyback had gotten life in Azkaban.
"Well, Baron Lupin's wife, Dora." "Oh, Merlin, Dora," Draco said, rolling his eyes.
Ginny turned and regarded Draco.
"Someone you know?"
"Another cousin, whose wedding I attended in April of last year," Draco explained. "My aunt Andromeda's daughter is called Dora because she can't stand that her mother named her Nymphadora."
Hermione wrinkled her nose.
"Merlin, I can understand that one."
"Anyhow," Harry continued, "Dora gave birth to their son, Edward, recently. Baron Lupin will be away from the Chocolatier until Easter."
"Mighty generous of Duke Black," Ron acknowledged.
"It certainly is," Hermione put in.
"Well," Harry said at last, "I informed Sirius of my arithmancy experience, and the fact that I'm a silent partner in Fred and George's shop, and did the quarterly review with them."
Ron raised his eyebrows. "Did you mention that Mum taught you everything she knows about bacon and such?"
"Of course I did, Ron," Harry assured him.
"Wait a moment," Draco interrupted, staring at Harry. "You thought Sirius was handsome," he said, jabbing a finger towards Harry, most unlike his refined pure-blood breeding, but was nevertheless grinning from ear to ear.
Hermione gasped as Harry turned pink.
"You did, didn't you, Harry?" she cried,
her own smile coming out to play.
"Oh, Harry," squealed Ginny, "that's just marvelous."
"Yeah, mate, whatever makes you happy," Ron assured him.
Harry flushed a darker shade.
"Well," he said softly, "Sirius asked me back in 3 days to make the chocolate tort."
With cherries?
Hermione and Ginny asked.
With the ganache?
Ron and Draco wanted to know.
"That's the one," Harry told them, scratching the back of his neck. "He wants me to come in at 4 in the morning, though."
"That's not so unusual, Harry," Hermione assured him. "My Aunt Frieda worked in a bakery in Chelsea when she was younger, before she met and married my Uncle Chester," she explained with a smile. "Several times a week, when Aunt Frieda was on shift, she'd have to get there between 3 and 5 in the morning.
"But why?" Draco asked, confused.
"Baking does take a lot of work," Ginny said, remembering how long her mother took in the kitchen for a party where lots of baking was required.
"It does, but remember, this was a muggle bakery," Hermione explained. "As in, no magic to light the fire, or to make the dough rise faster, and no preservation charms either. So you have to be sure you have everything in working order by the time the shop doors open, otherwise you won't have anything to sell when they do. And if that happens, it could mean the difference between feeding your family or not for the week."
"Blimey," Ron said, shaking his head. "I never thought of it that way. Do other muggle businesses work that way too?"
"Many of them, Ronald," Hermione said fondly, before turning back to Harry. "So, did you tell Duke Black you'd be back?"
Harry nodded at her.
"I did, yes. And not just because I thought he was handsome," he said quickly, causing Hermione and Ginny to grin at one another, while Draco smothered a laugh and Ron didn't quite quiet a chuckle. "I did it because I didn't want to merely give him my recipe for the tort."
"As well you shouldn't, Harry, no matter how handsome he is," Ginny said stoutly. "Make him work for it, even if he is a duke."
"Mum works hard on her own cakes and things," Ron put in. "I'd hate for you to get taken advantage of, Harry."
"Luckily, I've got lots of recipes that are my own," Harry said quietly. "Maybe by the time I make them all, Sirius will have gotten to know me and will take me seriously."
"Take you seriously?" Draco asked. "You're of good breeding, with plenty of talent, and are respected by your peers, adults, and the younger generation alike within the wizarding world, Harry. Why would you think Sirius wouldn't take you seriously?"
"Other than the fact that he only knows about my parentage, plus what I saw fit to inform him about today," Harry spread his hands.
"And what he decides to check up on,"
Hermione said. Harry swiveled his head towards her, alongside the rest of the table.
"What are you talking about, Hermione?"
he asked. Hermione sighed.
"Well, of course, much of the job will hinge on how well you perform with the tort baking and whatnot. It could prove nerve-wracking to do so in an unfamiliar kitchen,"
she said sympathetically. Harry hunched his shoulders.
"I've dealt with worse,"
he replied brusquely, doing his best not to dwell on the notion that he no longer had his parents with him.
"Of course, Harry," Hermione responded. "But naturally, Sirius will seek to find out all about your academic achievements and your character."
Harry blinked.
"How do you mean?"
"I mean that he will likely send an owl to Headmaster Dumbledore, at the very least, to try and glean some information about you, such as why he should hire you in the first place?"
Harry rolled his eyes.
"It's not like no one else has served detentions, Hermione."
Hermione huffed, annoyed.
"Yes, I understand that, Harry. Thankfully, it didn't make any difference when it came to your marks," she said primly. "He will likely want people close to you over the years to question your character, among any other things he deems necessary. Who's to say he won't seek out the headmaster, Professor McGonagall, or any of us? Not to mention the fact that you're friends with Draco, a relative of his."
Harry peered over at Draco.
"You hear from Sirius regularly?"
"Now and again," Draco replied. "He's meant to come to the manor for Christmas. I'm sure you'll see him then."
"Why hasn't he been there in years past?" Harry wanted to know.
"He did, before you and I were close," Draco responded. "When he could get away from his intensive lessons in France. I assume he mentioned those."
Harry nodded.
"He did, yes."
"And he'll likely be a guest when Ginny and I marry next spring," Draco informed Harry with a small shrug. "After all, he is head of the House of Black now. Most members of the Sacred 28 will be there, naturally."
"Blimey, mate," Ron said again. "What are the odds?"
"Many pureblood families are related, Ronald," Hermione said.
Ginny grimaced at that.
"Please don't remind us," she said with a groan. "But was he kind to you?" Hermione pressed.
Harry sighed.
"I suppose he was, yes. He even smiled a few times."
"Merlin,"
Draco breathed, clearly impressed.
"What?"
Harry asked.
Draco shook his head.
"No, it's just Sirius must have been quite taken with you in order to smile at you so openly like that."
"The shop was deserted," Harry said quietly.
"Doesn't matter," Draco said quickly. "Sirius doesn't typically smile, and hasn't done, not really, ever since he left his house when he was 16. Baron Lupin's father, Lyle, put him up during that period," he explained. "He lost touch with his parents and younger brother, Regulus, who was primed as heir once Sirius was exiled. Then Regulus died, prompting Walburga to have a fit which sent her down the stairs. Hit her head, too, before she died. Orion, that's Sirius's father, just wouldn't listen to reason after that, and drank poison."
"Despite their treatment of him, he must have felt badly," Harry said quietly.
"He did," Draco confirmed, "although he wouldn't outwardly say so. He fled to France, Italy, and Germany to escape his life, and to make something of himself. Only a handful of occasions did he come back, a few of my birthdays, Christmases, and the girls' christening. He almost never smiled during that time, and even when visiting photographs were taken, or portraits were painted, he looked stoic."
"Do you want to do this, Harry?"
Hermione asked in the moment of silence that followed.
"You don't have to, you know. I know we've all been on you to make a decision about your future, since you've never been content to be a layabout."
"I know, Hermione," Harry said quietly, and straightened his shoulders. "But I have to do this. I really do."
Ron nodded at him.
"We understand, mate."
Hermione gave him a small smile.
"And we support you."
"Just tell us if you need anything," Ginny asked.
"Because we'll always be here for you," Draco assured him.
Harry smiled at them all.
"Thanks," he responded, but didn't share with him that the main reason for wanting this position at the Chocolatier was to try and make Sirius smile more often than he'd done in recent years.
Chapter 2 Harry wrote down all the recipes he'd come up with over the last several years, and had a couple of baking lessons with Molly Weasley before he was due to meet Sirius. Molly, meanwhile, was very pleased that Harry had a plan, and spoke very highly of Duke Black, telling Harry more than once how unfortunate it was to be cut off from one's family. Molly even encouraged Harry to adapt some of her own recipes to impress Duke Black, and Harry was enthusiastic about the support from his adoptive mother. Arthur, too, was quite excited about the prospect of Harry finally gaining employment, and praised the pudding Harry made them that evening, a trifle filled with strawberry jam, cream, and sponge cake. Harry spent the final day before he was due to meet Sirius, revising and reading, and made sure to go to bed very early the evening before. His snowy owl, Hedwig, had carried letters back and forth from Harry and Sirius, the latter of whom praised the animal for her intelligence, beauty, charismatic spirit, and devotion to Harry. Hedwig informed Harry, in her own way, how much she enjoyed Sirius's company, and Harry was so relieved to hear that, hoping that he would spend much of his time in Sirius's company as time went by. On the day of Harry's baking audition, for, really, he had no idea what else to call it, he was up at 2:30 to ensure that he was clean and presentable. Once he had finished bathing, he gathered up the supplies Molly had surprised him with as an early Christmas gift, and took the flute to the chocolatier, saying goodbye to a sleeping Hedwig, who tucked her head back under her wing as Harry left. Stepping through the flue, Harry felt strong arms around his biceps as he stumbled, and, looking up, was locked in eye contact with Sirius himself, causing Harry to flush deeply, and Sirius's expression to change minutely, before he gently released him and stood him up in the back room of the chocolatier.
"Scourgify," Sirius said, waving his wand around Harry's form, and got a good look at what Harry was holding. "Ah, you made some purchases," he guessed.
Harry nodded. "Yes, my adopted mother and I have been using these since I was a child. I think it's always beneficial to have some things you're comfortable with, once you're in an environment unfamiliar to you." Sirius gave a small smile to Harry at his words.
"Precisely," he replied,
and waved for Harry to follow him, and the pair of them ventured into the kitchen beyond.
"You'll have 3 hours to prepare me whatever you wish. At least one thing," he explained,
and Harry nodded his head in a respectful manner.
"But if you can manage more than one, that's all right as well."
Harry gave the man a bright smile. "Yes, sir. Thank you, sir."
"I'll be in my study going over the books,"
Sirius explained, pointing to a door just outside the entrance to the kitchen.
"Let me know if you have need of anything."
"I will, sir," Harry assured him. Sirius spent the next few moments pointing out where various ingredients and other baking essentials were kept, as well as bowls, spoons, and other items. He then gave a nod to Harry before he slipped from the kitchen, closing the door to his study behind him. He did, however, take the opportunity to remind Harry that if he needed anything, anything at all, he would be on hand to assist him. Harry, nodding his head decisively, decided that it was best to get to work. He began preparing the space to make his dark chocolate tort by mixing the batter for it together and cooking the cherries in a port wine reduction over the cauldron above the fire in the massive fireplace the kitchen had on offer. Harry hummed to himself as he worked, and the kitchen soon smelled quite heavenly. He put a keep warm charm upon the cherries and port wine before he began to make the chocolate ganache, and quite soon, Harry's masterpiece, consisting of the chocolate tort with cherries, port wine, and chocolate ganache, had officially come together. This he placed beneath a stasis charm, for he still had plenty of time and wanted to make one or two more dishes. The second dish that Harry would be preparing that morning was his very favorite, treacle tart, which he'd adapted in recent years by including maple butter, which he made himself, into the dish instead of syrup, for a richer, creamier tart. Harry set to work making the crust from scratch and by hand. He knew entirely well that some shops would provide pastry crust for their customers, but there was something delightfully homey about doing it oneself, for one could truly say that they had made the entirety of the dish themselves.
Once the treacle boiled just ever so slightly, he ladled it carefully in the now-baked crust and popped the bubbles, merrily popping away upon its surface before it, too, was placed beneath a stasis charm. Finally, Harry decided that his final dish would be bread-and-butter pudding with a rich custard, which he made with large eggs and clotted cream for an extra creamy flavor. Because he absolutely despised currants, Harry had always used some dried cranberries he had prepared into a sweeter reduction by melting them down in a pot with fine sugar. As Harry folded in the cranberry mixture into the dough and custard, he did his best to bake it in an unfamiliar oven, which he utilized for the tort and the tart earlier. Thankfully, he understood it very well, as he was just primping it into finalization when Sirius elected to return into the kitchen. Sirius's eyes widened at the three dishes Harry had set out for him, and was quite impressed with the versatility behind them all. It was just gone 7, so Sirius was still in the right amount of time proposed for Harry. As Sirius stepped forward, he inhaled each treat, watching as Harry removed the stasis charm from each and stood back. There was a dusting of flour on one of his cheeks, but his apron wasn't stained, and his hands were clean, his long sleeves rolled up to ensure that his shirt wouldn't become ruined. Sirius was also impressed that small slivers of each delight had been cut up for him and rested on plates before each dish. Yet each cut was done precisely and evenly, a true respect for each dish very apparent.
"Impressive display," Sirius said,
and moved towards the tort first, for he was the most familiar with it out of all the dishes Harry had described.
"This is the tort you mentioned, correct?"
Harry nodded at him.
"Yes, sir," he replied.
Sirius picked up the plate and the golden fork and stabbed into the tort. It was cooked correctly and wasn't too hard nor too soft, and once he tasted it, many flavors, which went very well together, exploded upon the surface of his tongue. The chocolate ganache went very well with the tartness of the cherries and had been smoothed over by the port wine.
"Very nice,"
Sirius said at last, finishing the small slice, and set down the plate. He turned to the second dish and looked down at it.
"And this is?"
"Treacle tart, sir. My favorite," Harry admitted.
"It's always wise to make things which are close to our hearts,"
Sirius informed him, before he lifted up the plate and sampled the dish.
"Mmm. Much richer in flavor than I've ever tasted. What did you do differently?"
"Maple butter, as opposed to syrup, sir," Harry explained. Sirius looked impressed.
"I would have never considered that,"
he admitted, nodding his head in approval, and again finished the slice before lowering the plate and turned to the third and final dish that Harry had made.
"This looks a bit different than the bread-and-butter puddings I've been used to,"
he mused, not unkindly. Harry smiled, pleased that Sirius had recognized the dish for what it was. "I make the custard richer with large eggs and clotted cream, sir," he informed him. "As for the bread-and-butter aspect of it, well, I'm not fond of currants," he confessed, and Sirius looked up at him. "I just don't like them. So what I do instead is use cranberries, and boil them down with some fine sugar in a pot. I think it rounds out everything nicely."
"Very interesting," Sirius said,
nodding his head, and made to sample the final dish. His eyes widened considerably and looked down at Harry.
"I've never enjoyed this pudding before now,"
he informed Harry, whose heart hammered within him at the words.
"However, I do believe that now I have sampled this, that has officially changed."
Sirius finished the final slice and lowered the plate down, licking his lips.
"Very impressive, Harry. How would you feel if these were the specials today?"
Harry raised his eyebrows. "Do you mean it?" he asked. Sirius smiled a bit more this time.
"I do indeed, Harry. You're very talented. In fact, I would appreciate if you created a special each day. Can you handle that?"
Harry nodded his head.
"Yes, sir, I can." "Wonderful," Sirius said. "The bakery closes at 3 o'clock daily. I can man the store until you've finished in here, and I wholeheartedly approve of cleaning spells. Then you can take over in the front and inform the customers that your wares are the ones being bought. Once we close up shop, I'd like to spend an hour or so going over with you what the special would be the following day, although the final decision is up to you, of course.
although I do reserve the right to make a suggestion or two. Would you mind if I did that, Harry?
Sirius asked, almost as if he didn't want to overstep. Harry shook his head at him.
No, sir, I don't mind.
Excellent, Sirius responded. After 4 o'clock, the day is yours to do with as you please. You'll be expected back here at 4 the following morning, but in the time between, you may do as you will. Saturdays we close at noon, and we are closed on Sundays, which means we don't need to discuss anything after noontime on Saturday.
Harry found himself smiling at the notion that he'd fully landed upon his feet.
Yes, sir. I can handle that, sir.
Sirius nodded at him.
I know you can,
he responded, before reaching out his hand, which Harry took. And they shook. And Harry was impressed at how, despite the firmness of the handshake, it was still gentle in nature.
Welcome to Wixen Chocolatier, Harry, he said,
his eyes boring into Harry's very soul, and his grip holding on a bit longer than considered appropriate, although Harry didn't mind. Harry worked very hard as the Christmas season continued, and December arrived with much excitement from the other shoppers in Diagon Alley. Everyone wanted to sample Harry's confections, and Harry was pleased to be assisting Sirius's business and earning an honest living, which he was quite sure was far too much. However, Sirius informed him that his confections were doing much of the heavy lifting when it came to the chocolatier's income, so it was only fair that Harry get a sizable galleon reward. With December arriving, also came invitations to various holiday festivities, and Harry and Sirius had both received ones to the Burrow and Malfoy Manor. Harry stepped into work one morning, and Sirius caught him before he went into the kitchen. Harry would be making an abundance of Christmas cakes that day, because Sirius insisted that he wanted many in stock to ensure that every wizarding household could sample Harry's delicious version of the treat, which was far more sweet than the traditional spicy variety.
"Did you happen to receive any invitations over the last couple of days?"
Sirius asked without preamble, although his tone was polite.
"Yes," Harry nodded, relieved that Sirius no longer required him to call him Sir. "To my adoptive family's home, as well as to Malfoy Manor."
"You are familiar with the Malfoys?"
Harry gave Sirius a small smile, knowing that this particular conversation would come up eventually. "Draco and I were in the same year at Hogwarts. Despite me being sorted into Gryffindor and Draco into Slytherin, we ultimately became quite close friends and remain so to this day. Not to mention the fact that Draco is engaged to marry my sister."
"You know that he and I are cousins?"
Sirius questioned. Harry nodded at him.
"I was aware of that, yes. Draco informed me of it after the occasion of your and my first meeting."
Sirius stared down at the surface of his desk.
"Traditionally, the Malfoy family tends to go all out for Christmas,"
he said quietly.
"It's usually a formal ball, and my invitation communicated to me that that is what the event shall be this year."
Harry gave Sirius a small smile.
"Mine did as well," he said softly, hoping to lighten the mood, for Sirius had suddenly become very serious.
"I was wondering if anyone has asked for you to accompany them," Sirius asked,
his tone nervous, almost as if he was afraid of being refused. Harry shook his head. His heart was hammering within him again, and the notion that Sirius may have been asking him to the ball?
"No," he responded at last. "I frequently just go with my adopted brother and his fiancée." "Not that I would be averse to being accompanied," he said quickly, hoping he hadn't stuck his foot into his mouth.
Sirius nodded his head.
"Well, perhaps, if you do not think it inappropriate, you would be willing to be my guest?"
he asked. Harry blinked.
"Your guest?"
"Yes,"
Sirius told him, finally looking up at him.
"As in, by my side for the evening. My dance partner, engaging in light-hearted conversation, eating supper with me, that sort of thing."
Harry swallowed, altogether trembling in his boots.
"Is this merely because I'm your apprentice that you're asking me, Sirius?"
Sirius shook his head.
"No,"
he said softly.
No, it is not merely because you are my apprentice that I am asking you this, Harry.
Right, said Harry, knowing that he would have to collect a catalogue from Madame Malkin's to purchase new dress robes for the occasion. He wanted to impress Sirius, that much was clear, but he also didn't wish to make him look bad.
Yes, yes, I would like very much to accompany you, Sirius.
Thank you,
Sirius said, and Harry was shocked at the tone of his voice, before taking him by the hand and kissing it in an almost reverent manner.
Thank you for agreeing to accompany me for the evening.
Harry sighed, doing his best not to look and feel so crestfallen as he did his best not to pull his hand away from Sirius too violently.
For the evening, Sirius, of course, he said,
and swept out of the room, feeling utterly defeated at the notion. Yes, Sirius wished to be seen with him, but only in public, and certainly not for the long term. Harry did his best to focus on the influx of Christmas cakes he'd been told to make that day, and thankfully he didn't mess them up. He was taking off for luncheon that day, as it was a Saturday, and he wouldn't have to be back in the shop until Monday. Once Harry had finished in the back, he went through the motions in the front, doing his best to sell his wares to the customers, and they bought many of the Christmas cakes. Harry was pleased when noon rolled around, and he quickly put his apron back on its peg in the kitchen and said a stilted goodbye to Sirius, whom he'd been avoiding all day. There was a fine powder of snow on the cobblestones of Diagon Alley, and Harry made his way to the Preening Swan, a fine dining establishment, where he was due to meet an old schoolmate of his, Cedric Diggory, who was in town from his position as a professor at Beauxbatons Academy of Magic in France, where he was the Transfiguration professor. Although Cedric was 3 years older than Harry, they got together many times a year for a pint and such, and they had faced off more than once on the Quidditch pitch together while at Hogwarts.
"Harry!" Cedric beamed warmly as Harry was shown to their table, getting to his feet and embracing him, clapping him on the back. "How are you, mate?"
"Fine, thank you," Harry said, nodding to the hostess and taking his menu, and sitting down across from Cedric.
"Your owl said it was important," he went on, gazing over at Cedric, his eyebrows raised. "Are your parents all right?"
Cedric nodded.
"Yes, they're fine. I'll mention you asked after them. You know how they adore you," he said, and Harry smiled. Amos and Maya Diggory were a lovely couple, and although they always cheered for their son at Hufflepuff matches, they claimed that Harry and Cedric ranked equally when it came to their roles as Seeker.
"But it is a bit... urgent, I mean."
Cedric looked around before he dipped into the pocket of his cloak and pulled out a box.
"I need you to tell me what you think of this."
Harry took the box on offer and opened it, his eyes widening when he saw the beautiful silver ring within, with a golden snitch as its centerpiece, which opened now and again to show off a beautiful diamond.
"Wow, Cedric, that's brilliant," Harry crowed, returning the ring to Cedric, who smiled sheepishly. "For Cho, right? How are things going with her?"
"Wonderfully," Cedric informed him, beaming once again.
Cho and Cedric had been a couple since their Hogwarts days, and now Cho taught charms at Beauxbatons alongside Cedric, and the pair never seemed closer.
"I'm planning on proposing to her after Christmas dinner. I have our gardeners putting the grounds to rights already, making them match the decorations from the Yule Ball."
Harry grinned. If anyone could be sentimental, it was Cedric Diggory.
"You're going to wear the same dress robes, then?" he joked.
Cedric laughed aloud at that.
"I did show them to Madame Malkin, and she's making them over for us. You know how my parents like to have things nice for Christmas. Her parents, June and Izzel, are invited for supper that evening as well."
Harry nodded. He knew that Lord and Lady Chang would be enthusiastic about the match, as Cedric was due to inherit the title of Count Diggory from his father one day, as his sole heir. And Cho would be a lovely Countess Diggory, Harry mused.
"I think Cho will love the ring," Harry assured Cedric, clasping his arm across the table and grinning at him. "You designed it for her in mind, after all. She'll love that."
"What about you?"
Cedric asked, once he thanked Harry, and Harry began sipping at his glass of gillywater.
"You mentioned in your own owl that you'd taken up an apprenticeship."
Harry nodded at him.
"Yes, with Duke Black of Grimmauld, at his chocolatier down the road from here," he explained.
Cedric grinned.
"That's always been a passion of yours, baking," he said, gleeful that his friend had found his niche. "I've heard many good things about Duke Black. What's he like to work with? He's always been rumored as a bit elusive."
"I'd say you're correct in believing the rumors," Harry responded. "He's a nice enough man to work for, I suppose. He knew my parents back at Hogwarts."
Cedric raised his eyebrows.
"Did he tell you much about them in those days?"
Harry shook his head.
"He doesn't like discussing it. He and his business partner, Baron Lupin, were close to them both, however. They took different paths from what he's told me. My parents wanted to marry and start a family, but Duke Black and Baron Lupin wanted to get out into the world and find themselves."
"So, a chocolatier?" Cedric asked.
Harry nodded. "Apparently, yes. They took private lessons with pastry chefs and chocolatiers from France, Italy, and Germany to learn all about the art of confection making. They opened up shop not too long ago, as they wanted to learn as much as possible before taking that leap into the business world."
Cedric nodded in approval.
"Smart," he said, as the waitress came to their table. "The leg of lamb, please, with boiled potatoes and root vegetables."
The waitress nodded.
"Very good, Master Diggory," she replied, before she turned and regarded Harry for his order. "The Cornish hen, please, with the herbed potatoes and roasted vegetables."
The waitress smiled at him.
"Sounds delicious, Earl Potter," she said, making sure to write everything down with her quill before she sped away to relay the orders to the chef.
"So, it's just you, Duke Black, and Baron Lupin, then?" Cedric wanted to know.
Harry shook his head.
"Just me and Duke Black for the moment," he explained. "Baron Lupin is spending time with his wife. She just was delivered of a boy, Edward, a few weeks ago. He's not due to return back to the shop until Easter."
"Blimey! Mighty generous of the Duke," Cedric said, nodding with approval.
"So, the Duke has you preparing the confections, then?"
"All except for the chocolates," Harry explained. "I couldn't do those with my eyes closed," he confessed with a rueful smile.
"You mentioned you were doing specials," Cedric said, his eyes wide with eagerness. "What was the special this week?"
Harry dipped into his cloak and unshrunk the parcel from within, which was equipped with stasis charms, a freshening charm, and a warming charm.
"This is for you and your family for Christmas," he said, and Cedric grinned.
Unwrapping it, Cedric gasped.
"Did you make this?" he asked.
Harry nodded.
"Yes,"
he replied, and explained the charm work upon it. "It should stay fresh up until Christmas supper."
Cedric beamed at Harry. "Your own recipe, right? Not too spicy?"
Harry grinned back at him.
"The very same."
Cedric crowed at that, shrinking down the Christmas cake again, before he leaned across the table and kissed Harry on the cheek.
"You're amazing, you are."
Harry shrugged.
"Wish everyone thought so," he replied, a little sadly.
Harry arrived back at the bakery the following Monday, his spirits still downtrodden as he thought about being in close proximity to Sirius again. Sirius, however, was not in yet, and so Harry merely put on his apron and got to work. He was preparing a strawberry trifle that day, to be adorned with raspberries on top, and equipped with yellow cake instead of the traditional sponge and clotted cream. As he worked, he was vaguely aware of Sirius coming in, late, but said nothing and instead focused on his work for the day. Once the trifles had been formed, Harry traditionally made a dozen or so for the special. He looked up to see Sirius in the doorway. His blue eyes appeared haunted, and there were dark circles beneath them. Harry snapped his fingers, and the kitchen dishes began cleaning themselves as he took off his apron and stared in a rather quizzical manner at his boss, wondering what the matter was.
"Is something the matter?"
he asked at last, placing stasis charms upon each of the trifles, so they would stay fresh until the doors opened later on that morning.
"Come to my study,"
Sirius said, before he turned on his heel and left Harry alone. Harry blinked, but nevertheless hung up his apron on the peg and followed the man, making his way through the rest of the kitchen and into the study proper.
"What may I assist you with this morning?" he asked.
"What may I assist you with this morning, sir?"
Harry gritted his teeth.
"There's no need to call me sir, Sirius."
Sirius rolled his eyes.
"I see that my feelings have been misplaced.
Harry felt his mouth go dry.
What are you talking about? He asked.
Sirius sighed, dragging a hand down his face.
I suppose I was pleased and flattered at the attention, but the age difference is much too great and—
Wait a moment, Harry said, crossing the space between them and gently easing Sirius's hands down from his face. Please, tell me what you're talking about before you say or do anything completely rash. Sirius gazed down at Harry, but didn't push him away, or order him to release the soft grip upon his hands.
I saw you at the preening swan on Saturday last.
Harry blinked.
All right.
I didn't know it was against the law to have a luncheon in a public place, Sirius, he said softly. You said yourself that my time outside of the Chocolatier was my own, to do with as I pleased.
Not if it involves young gentlemen, when I thought we—
Sirius lowered his eyes and shook his head, clearly as if he was in the process of chastising himself.
As I said, I should have considered the age difference much more carefully, instead of attempting to tie such a captivating young man to a broken—
You are not broken, Harry burst out at last, raising his voice to the man for the first time, whose blue eyes immediately snapped to his green ones. Do you hear me, Sirius? You are not broken. We are shaped by our experiences, of course, but we cannot allow them to define us completely. Yes, you were cast out by your family.
Yes, you were looked on less favorably than your younger brother.
Yes, your parents didn't understand or agree with your values or standings.
But that doesn't make you broken. None of it does.
Sirius shook his head.
But that still doesn't change the fact that I saw you with that eligible young gentleman at luncheon on Saturday.
Eligible young gentleman? You mean Cedric? Harry demanded, shaking his head. Cedric is an old schoolmate of mine, Sirius. He was Hufflepuff seeker while I played the position for Gryffindor. Although there is a friendship there, naturally, we couldn't possibly be more than that at all. I adore his parents, and they me, which is why we were meeting. I always give him a baked good for their family's Christmas supper. Sirius blinked, utterly shocked.
You're merely friends with him? He asked.
Harry nodded his head. Yes, of course I am. In case you haven't noticed, one of the main reasons why I took the position here as apprentice—
You are hardly an apprentice, especially now, Sirius said softly. I've spoken with Remus, and he is in agreement. We want to retain you as head baker alongside Remus. That is, if you're interested in the position.
Of course I am, Harry assured him. Other than my love of baking all manner of sweets and confections, my main reason for taking this position was to spend time with you. Sirius looked amazed.
Spend time with me?
Of course, Harry said, smiling then. Initially, I wanted to make you smile, truly, publicly, and to ensure your happiness for the world to see and feel. Sirius stared down at Harry, utterly amazed.
And now?
He asked. Now? Harry whispered, reaching up to gently cradle Sirius's face in his hands. Now, I'm falling in love with you, Sirius. The notion that I could make all the beautiful things for you in your kitchen just helped expedite matters. I don't think you could ever look upon me the same way as I do you, but I just wanted you to know, in case there's ever a modicum of discomfort between us, know that it is all my fault and— Sirius bent down then, closing the distance between them and cementing his lips to Harry's, closing around them in their first kiss. Sirius felt Harry's hands drop from his face to ultimately settle upon his shoulders, and Sirius wrapped his arms around Harry's waist, pulling him closer still, up against his lean, toned form, until the links of their bodies touched, their mutual hardness straining for release. Sirius slipped his tongue in between Harry's lips and held fast, relieved that Harry seemed to melt into his embrace, almost as if he never wanted to let him go. Finally, Sirius broke back and away from him, staring into Harry's eyes as he rested his forehead against his.
I must tell you that I am falling in love with you as well, Harry,
he said, his voice hoarse from arousal.
I could never ask for a better Christmas present.
Harry smiled, standing on his toes to press a delicate kiss to Sirius's nose.
Perhaps we can make our societal debut at the Malfoys' ball. Sirius sighed.
You still wish to go with me, after my obtuse behavior?
Harry chuckled lightly at that.
Of course I do, he assured him.
Sirius shook his head.
I can never apologize enough for it.
Harry shook his head himself, pulling Sirius closer and pressing his lips to his.
There's nothing to forgive, he said quietly.
Harry's new dress robes were an attractive green that brought out his eyes, and he was a nervous wreck when Sirius arrived through his flue to escort him to the Malfoy ball. Nevertheless, Harry slipped Sirius's hand in his and admired the deep burgundy dress robes the man wore. Arm in arm, they flew directly to Malfoy Manor, where an aged house elf took their thick winter cloaks from them and gestured for them to get into the receiving line. The butler was a priggish sort of man, but nevertheless announced them to the party.
Presenting Duke Sirius Black of Grimmauld, escorting Harry Potter, Earl of Godric's Hollow.
Looking down, Harry noticed that the Wixen in attendance were many that he himself knew. Lord Albus Dumbledore of Mould on the Wold, alongside his beloved husband, Lord Gellert Grindelwald, Baron Bagshot. Ron and Hermione, Molly and Arthur, Bill and Fleur, Charlie and his fiancée, André Aigvu, Alicia with Fred and Angelina with George, and Draco with Ginny, who stood in close proximity with Marquis Lucius and Marchioness Narcissa, as well as Cordelia and Cressida, with Theodore Knott and Blaise Zabini, respectively, their dual engagements announced to the Daily Prophet at the beginning of the month. Sirius pointed out Remus and Dora, who stood with Dora's mother and father, Andromeda and Edward Tonks. Venturing over there, Sirius clasped Remus's arm, kissed Dora and Andromeda on their cheeks, and bowed to Edward, who was Squire Tonks, the same title that Arthur Weasley held.
Everyone, this is Harry, he said, beaming.
Remus turned and regarded Harry with a smile.
A mirror image of your father, although your eyes are your mother Lily's.
A pleasure to meet you, Baron Lupin, Harry said from Sirius's side.
Please, call me Remus, Remus said warmly, turning to his wife. And this is my beloved wife, Dora, and her mother and father, Squire Edward and Dame Andromeda Tonks.
Wonderful to meet you all, Harry said. Baroness Lupin, Squire Tonks, and Dame Tonks, he went on, formally.
Please, call us Edward, Andromeda, and Dora, came Squire Tonks's reply, alongside nods from Andromeda and Dora, respectively.
It's lovely to meet you at last, Dora put in, positively beaming, as her hair changed color multiple times to confirm her happiness. Little Teddy will be sorry he missed you.
Please, do come for tea to Lupin House whenever you like, Remus said.
And you're always welcome at Tonks Cottage, Edward Tonks put in.
Harry smiled at them all.
And all of you are welcome at Hollow Hall whenever you wish to come by, he assured them. Teddy, too.
They exchanged a few more pleasantries with the Tonks and Lupin families before Harry guided Sirius away to formally introduce them to Molly and Arthur. It was the day of the winter solstice, and the Burrows celebrations did not occur until Christmas Eve. As they stepped towards Harry's adoptive family, Harry couldn't shake the pride he felt about being on Sirius's arm in public for all the main players of the Wizarding World to see.
"Mum, Dad," Harry said tentatively as they stepped forward.
"This is Duke Sirius Black of Grimmauld Place," he said.
"A pleasure, my Lord Duke," Arthur said, beaming at him,
pleased to see his youngest son so happy.
"I'm Squire Arthur Weasley, and this is my wife, Dame Molly Weasley."
"Wonderful to finally meet Harry's family," Sirius said, and he was beaming. "I'm very much looking forward to your gathering in 3 days' time. Harry and I will be bringing the Christmas pudding, of course."
"Of course," Molly said, smiling up at Sirius. "We look forward to it."
Next, Harry and Sirius ventured over to where Ron, Hermione, Draco, and Ginny were all standing, with positively mad grins on all their faces.
"Good evening,"
Harry managed to say. I'd like to introduce you to...
Ah, Cousin Sirius, Draco said, grinning familiarly at Sirius. So pleased you could finally join us again.
Draco, Ginny hissed at him, be nice.
I'm afraid that my dear cousin's quite correct in his words toward me, Miss Weasley,
Sirius said, and Ginny flushed as red as her hair.
No, no, don't be embarrassed, my dear. I know as well as Cousin Draco does that I've been neglecting my family for long enough. And you,
Sirius went on, turning to Ron and Hermione next,
the pair of you must be Master Ron Weasley and Lady Hermione Granger. It's a pleasure to meet you both.
Ron nodded, smiling.
A pleasure to meet you, my Lord Duke, he replied, bowing to Sirius in a moment of respect.
Hermione curtsied.
Lady Hermione Granger, sir. Daughter of Earl Humphrey and Countess Charlotte Granger.
I have it on good authority that you and Master Ron will make a fine earl one day, Sirius said,
and Ron looked very surprised by this declaration.
Harry has informed me at length of your good character, Master Ron, and I'm inclined to believe him.
Ron nodded his head.
Thank you, my Lord Duke.
It is Sirius to all of you,
Sirius assured him.
Any friends of Harry's are friends of mine.
Harry then followed Sirius to greet Lucius and Narcissa, who were pleased to see that Sirius and Harry were attending their annual Christmas ball together. Theodore Knott and Blaise Zabini respectfully presented Lady Cordelia and Lady Cressida respectively, and Sirius and Harry treated both gentlemen accordingly, although Sirius was more familiar with his girl cousins than Harry was. Little treats were passed around the ballroom, and then it was time for dancing, with Lucius and Narcissa leading the waltz, although most of the other couples hurried to the floor as well.
"Are you having a nice time?" Harry asked Sirius as they danced.
"I should say so,"
Sirius said, turning Harry, and his eyebrows raised.
"What is it?"
Harry wanted to know. Sirius spun Harry so that they could both see what he'd been looking at.
"Your friend, Cedric Diggory,"
he said, nodding across the room. Harry nodded.
"Those are his parents, Count Amos and Countess Maya," he explained,
nodding to the older couple watching Cedric.
"And who is that fair maiden on his arm?"
Sirius asked.
"That would be Miss Cho Chang, daughter of Lord and Lady Chang," Harry informed him,
and Sirius lowered his eyes back down to Harry.
"Cedric's going to propose to her on Christmas Day," he explained.
Sirius blinked.
What?
That was the other reason why he asked me to meet, Harry informed him, positively grinning up at the man. He wanted my opinion on the ring he got for Cho.
Sirius sputtered in shock.
Ring?
Yes, ring, Harry told him. The pair of them have been together since Cho's 5th year and Cedric's 7th year. Cedric even took an apprenticeship at Quality Quidditch Supplies in Hogsmeade to be near her until she graduated.
And what form of employment do they have now?
Sirius asked softly.
They teach at Beauxbatons, Harry informed Sirius.
Cedric is the Transfiguration Professor, and Cho is the Charms Professor. Sirius shook his head.
I've been a fool, haven't I?
Harry sighed.
If you're a fool, then so am I.
A fool in love?
Sirius asked. Harry gasped.
You mean that?
Sirius nodded.
Yes, I love you, Harry Potter.
Harry grinned up at him, standing on his toes and whispering into the man's ear,
Come with me, and hurry.
Slipping through the other dancers, the pair of them left the ballroom entirely and came upon a balcony down the corridor close by. Snow swirled outside onto the Malfoy grounds, and it was truly a beautiful sight to behold. Layers upon layers of white gathered down upon the maze in the center of the garden, and Harry sighed in contentment.
"Did you bring me here just to watch the snow?"
Sirius asked, and Harry turned to look up at him with a smile.
"Not that it isn't lovely, but—"
"Sirius," Harry interrupted him gently. "Can you move?" Sirius blinked.
"Well, of course I—"
he began, but found himself rooted to the spot. Harry grinned up at him.
"Neither can I," he responded.
Sirius looked up then, and spotted the sprig of mistletoe hung up onto one of the beams.
"Oh, Merlin," he said softly,
before looking back down at Harry.
"Did you know about this?"
"Of course I did," Harry assured him. "I wanted a moment alone with you." Sirius raised his eyebrows.
"So did I. But why ever did you wish for a moment alone with me, Harry?"
he asked. Harry smirked, standing on his toes again and wrapping his arms around Sirius's neck.
"So that I could do this," he replied,
pressing his lips to Sirius's. Sirius allowed the kiss for a moment before gently easing back and away from Harry.
"And what have I asked you, if you wished to do that every day?"
Harry blinked, surprised by the words.
"Every day?"
he asked.
"Every day,"
Sirius repeated, finally able to move again, before he swept downwards to one knee and produced a box from inside his dress robes.
"For the rest of your life."
Harry's eyes widened.
"Sirius!"
"Harry,"
Sirius whispered, unfurling the catch upon the ring and opening it, revealing a beautiful platinum band set with emeralds.
"Harry, would you do me the honor of becoming my husband?"
he asked quietly. Harry gasped.
But my parents..."
"Your parents are very good actors," Sirius replied with a grin. "After our discussion, I went straight to the Burrow and asked for your hand. Then, once they consented, I went into the Black family vault at Gringotts and found this ring for you."
Harry found his eyes filling with tears.
"You mean it? You truly want to marry me?"
"I do," Sirius responded. "I want to marry you as soon as possible."
Harry swallowed.
"New Year's Eve?"
he asked. Sirius blinked.
"So soon?"
"Yes," Harry replied, determined. "I don't want a long engagement. I want to marry you and keep on baking in your shop."
"Harry, once we marry, it will be our shop. Well, ours and Remus's."
"Yes, yes, I want that," Harry said. "I want to raise our children to learn how to bake as expertly as I do, and have a shrewd business sense like their father."
"Children?"
Sirius asked.
"Yes," Harry replied with a grin. "You'd make a wonderful father."
"As would you,"
Sirius replied, looking down at the ring and Harry again.
"So, Harry, would you consent to bonding with me?"
"Yes, yes, I would,"
Harry cried out, his wrist trembling as he held out his hand, and Sirius slipped the ring onto the correct finger.
"Happy Christmas, Harry,"
Sirius said, wrapping his arms around him again. Harry looked up at Sirius, tearing his eyes away from the ring.
"Happy Christmas, Sirius,"
he replied, standing up on his toes again and kissing him. Chapter 3, Epilogue. Harry slowly opened his eyes and smiled. He could feel Sirius's arms wrapped around his naked form, with one of his hands pressed upon his swollen belly, the other wrapped around his cock, and his own cock teasing the cleft in his arse. Harry let out a satisfied moan and inched backwards, prompting Sirius to come to and press his lips to Harry's neck, biting down gently as he went, only to soothe the aches with his tongue. It had been a wonderfully happy 3 years since he had been married to this beautiful and generous man, and Harry wouldn't trade that time for anything. Harry remembered their wedding on New Year's Eve, precisely 1 week after Sirius had asked Harry to bond with him. They had moved into Hollow Hall, after Sirius had put Grimald Place up for sale almost as soon as he'd inherited it, due to not wanting to live there because of bad memories. Hollow Hall was somewhere Harry felt happiest, and although his mother and father had passed away, it didn't hold any terrible memories for him. Sirius, meanwhile, adored the place, and the only section of the house that he deemed needed remodeling was the kitchen, which they changed to be an exact replica of the one at the Chocolatier, and Harry couldn't have been happier with the wedding gift. For Sirius's wedding gift, it had been the gift of, and the promise of, a family, which Sirius had wholeheartedly accepted. Harry had also planned an amazing honeymoon in France, Italy, and Germany, with help from Mum Weasley, Hermione, Ginny, and Fleur, and Sirius was overjoyed to see his old masters again. The newlyweds went to the Wizarding French Quarter, Nymph Lane, the Italian Wizarding District, Fairy Corridor, and the German Wizarding neighborhood, Beautruckle Byway. In France, Harry and Sirius meandered through the Louvre Museum, looking at all the paintings, and even managed to gain access to the Wizarding section, where such painters as Luxo Carousos, the Quidditch player Roderick Plumpton, and Oliver Cartwright had their works on display. In Italy, they went to Ristorante La Campana, which had been opened nearly 350 years previously by a Wizarding family, and the food was absolutely incredible. In Germany, they went to the Viktualienmarkt, where they bought the freshest ingredients imaginable and sampled local meats, cheeses, fruits, and pastries. But Harry's favorite part of the trip had been when they visited Ermo della Giubiliana, a hotel in Sicily which dated back to the 12th century. The pair of them stayed in the 16th century guard suite, which still looked very much like it did upon its construction date. The sitting room was 18th century with period furniture, and the entirety of the suite was on one level. Because of Sirius's former master's schedule, they'd had to go to Italy first, and Harry had been permitted to do the research and select the hotel. The hotel where he would be giving himself to his husband for the first time. When the night finally arrived, Harry lay out on the bed while Sirius readied himself in the bathroom beyond. Harry wouldn't dare to tell anyone that he wasn't nervous. Of course he was nervous. He hadn't done anything with anyone in his entire life, because he had wanted to wait until he found love before he went that far. However, when he had first met Sirius, he didn't realize that he would ultimately be marrying him. Naturally, the attraction within that foundation had built from there, and he couldn't imagine his life without his beloved husband now. Satisfied that Sirius would make the entirety good for him, he leaned back against the fine pillows and silken coverlet to wait. When Sirius exited the bathroom, he gazed at Harry lovingly, before he crossed the room and sat down upon the edge of the bed. Reaching out, he gently stroked Harry's bare leg and informed him quietly,
"We do nothing you're not comfortable with."
Harry nodded, reaching outwards and taking Sirius by the hand.
"I trust you."
Sirius climbed slowly on top of Harry then, not wishing to frighten him, and pressed his lips gently to his.
"No regrets?" he asked.
Harry smiled up at his husband.
"None," he assured him.
Sirius seemed very satisfied with Harry's answer, and kissed him gently before his lips slipped off course and nibbled at Harry's earlobe, and gently left love bites in his wake down Harry's exposed neck. He stopped at Harry's nipples, each of which he laved with his tongue, sucking on them gently as he continued his journey down Harry's body. When he found Harry's navel, he dipped his tongue experimentally inside it, and Harry giggled, squirming beneath his new husband's ministrations. Sirius gently bracketed Harry's hips with his strong hands, continuing his sensual assault down the rippled flesh, until he finally got to his prize, the engorged member of his young husband. Sirius bent down further and pressed his nose into the soft black pubic hair, and inhaled the musky scent that was Harry. He grinned as Harry wailed above him, begging him to get on with it, and Sirius slowly dragged his tongue from base to tip of his husband's cock. He was pleased that Harry seemed to like that, and continued in this vein, three times over, before he took the tip of the cock in his mouth and sucked. He kept a hold of Harry's hips as he took more of his cock into his mouth, and Harry moaned his repeated joy of Sirius's talented lips and tongue, and Sirius thanked Merlin for silencing charms. He continued giving Harry pleasure orally until Harry let out a delicious moan and somehow managed to buck his hips and came down Sirius's throat. When Harry appeared boneless and sated, Sirius summoned the specially brewed lubricant into his hand and rubbed Harry's legs, coaxing them apart. The pair of them had discussed at length what the consummation of their union would entail, and although Harry appeared slightly nervous, he nevertheless had acquiesced more than once. Sirius poured a bit of lubricant onto the pad of his finger and empirically dragged it gently along the furrow of Harry's pucker. His husband, meanwhile, moaned at the sensation of someone touching him there for the first time and parted his legs even further in an inviting gesture.
"Please," Harry whispered.
Sirius pressed a patient kiss onto Harry's inner thigh, nipping at it and then soothing at the ache with his tongue.
"Remember, love, I have to prepare you first."
"Please get on with it," Harry begged him.
Sirius chuckled.
"Patience, my love," he whispered,
and continued in the vein of massaging the oil around the rim before he gently slipped a finger inside.
"I'll want to go up to 3 fingers eventually," he said,
and Harry nodded above him, doing his best to relax. Sirius continued pushing and pulling the first finger, and once Harry was relaxed enough, did the same with the second, and later the third, to the point where Harry's hole was as stretched as it could be, and Sirius felt a tremor of excitement bubbling from within him.
"Are you ready, love?"
he asked, his voice hoarse with emotion.
"Please, please," Harry begged again, "please get inside me."
Sirius slicked his own erection and gently eased it between Harry's arse cheeks, and his young husband expectedly groaned at the unexpected sensation.
"Breathe, love, and do like how we discussed,"
he encouraged him, remaining still and running soothing circles upon the surface of Harry's belly, and Harry nodded, relaxing as best he could. Once the tension subsided, Sirius was able to inch further inside Harry's hole, and finally he had bottomed out and Harry mewled at his prostate's first stimulation.
"Oh, Merlin, right there!"
Harry shouted. Sirius grinned and continued in this manner, pulling in and out expertly, and his husband was very satisfied with it, coming in ropes all over his belly within minutes. Sirius followed shortly thereafter, overwhelmed with the sensation of being inside Harry for the first time, as well as the look on Harry's face when he came to orgasm. Sirius gently eased himself out of Harry and cast a cleaning charm around them before enveloping Harry into his arms, and Harry held him tightly.
"How soon will we know?" Harry whispered.
Sirius looked down at him.
"How soon will we know what, love?"
Harry grinned and looked up at his husband.
"How soon will we know that I'm pregnant?"
Sirius and Harry had welcomed a beautiful, healthy baby boy at the end of the following September, who was christened James Sirius Potter Black, and was therefore the heir to the dukedom of Grimmauld. James had wavy hair like Sirius, and his eyes, but possessed Harry's high cheekbones and elegant mouth. Harry was over the moon at fulfilling his duty so quickly, and the pair of them lived at Hollow Hall together with their baby son, never happier in their lives than they'd been in those days. Harry smiled as the memories poured forth from within him. Their second son, Albus Remus Potter Black, had been born 1.5 years after James, and was therefore the heir to the earldom of Godric's Hollow. And now, 1.5 years later, Harry was pregnant again, this time with twin girls, and Harry and Sirius had had discussions on whether or not their family would be complete once Harry had given birth again.
"All right this morning, love?"
Sirius asked Harry, pressing a further kiss onto Harry's neck, and Harry pushed himself backwards onto Sirius's cock, which quickly rose to the occasion.
"Never better,"
Harry confirmed. James and Al were currently at the Burrow, as the girls were due any day, and Harry and Sirius figured they needed some time alone, which Arthur and Molly were more than happy to give.
"And our girls?"
Sirius asked, cupping Harry's belly more securely.
"Lily Rona seems to not want to sit on my bladder this morning," Harry mused, "and Molly Hermione isn't doing cartwheels at every turn."
"I'll bet that Ron and Hermione will be spoiling them in no time," Sirius said,
and Harry smiled at the notion.
"If they don't have their hands too full with Rose,"
Harry mused, mentioning their 2-year-old goddaughter, born 1 year after Ron and Hermione's bonding.
"Or Draco and Ginny with Scorpius Lucius,"
Sirius put in, gently rubbing Harry's back, mentioning the next heir to the House of Malfoy, born 9 months after Draco and Ginny's union, and already best friends with James.
Who will tell them that baby Arabella Lucia will be an absolute nightmare when she grows up?
Sirius mused.
Harry scoffed at that.
She's our goddaughter, love, he replied. I don't think Draco and Ginny will take too kindly to you saying that, not to mention the nightmares that Alexander and Adriana Knott will have to deal with when they grow up, being half Knott and half Malfoy.
Sirius chuckled. Despite his words, he did have a fondness for the twins of Theo Knott and Cordelia Malfoy. Harry hummed to himself at that declaration.
Or Zachariah and Zaharina Zabini, Harry said quietly, knowing entirely well that both he and his husband adored the twins of Blaise Zabini and Cressida Malfoy.
Merlin, he said at last, grimacing, if only my back wasn't killing me.
Sirius mused, pulling Harry closer to him. Perhaps a method of getting our girls to make their debuts is in order.
Harry grinned at that, but stayed on his side, as such a position was quite easy to maneuver, due to his swollen belly.
I'd say that sounds a wonderful idea.
Sirius grinned and teased Harry's hole, still stretched and slick from their activities the evening before.
Are you sure?
He asked. Harry nodded, arching his back.
Please, he confirmed. I'm sure.
Sirius gently eased himself inside of Harry, who mewled at the stretch, and reached backwards to grip on tightly to his husband.
Merlin, you're wonderful,
Sirius whispered, pressing kiss after kiss onto Harry's neck.
Oh, Merlin, so are you, Harry moaned back.
Sirius grinned and continued in this vein, making love to Harry as he'd never done before. And then, just as they both came, Harry gasped.
Love, are you all right?
Sirius asked, immediately on high alert.
Never better,
Harry assured him, turning to look over his shoulder at his husband. I think the girls are now on their way. The smile that graced Sirius's face was the most breathtaking one yet, and he leaned forward, pressing a kiss onto Harry's brow.
I'll fire call Poppy at once, he said,
casting a cleaning charm on both of them and hurrying to fetch his robe.
Sirius?
Harry asked, positioning the bolsters behind him the way he liked, while all the while staring up at his husband.
Yes, Harry,
his husband said. Harry smiled up at him.
I love you, he said.
Sirius grinned down at him.
And I love you as well, Harry.
Happy Christmas, Sirius, Harry said softly.
Sirius stepped forward and kissed Harry again.
Happy Christmas, my Harry, and to many more with our families, he proclaimed, before exiting the room to get to the flue.
Harry turned and spelled the curtains open, and smiled at the sight of snow falling upon the grounds of Hollow Hall. In this moment, as the fire crackled away in the bedroom, and as the frost clung to the window panes, Harry felt at peace and content. He had a husband who loved him, two sons, and was on his way to welcoming twin girls. All was truly merry and bright. The End.